This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we attend the Chillin' and Grillin' Picnic Potluck and Barbecue held on Monday, July 5th at H.J. Carroll Park in Chimicum by the Jefferson County Progressives, where we talk with a number of progressive activists, including supporters of Ballot Initiative 1362 for universal health coverage in Washington State, one-man peace movement Doug Milholland, and longtime stalwart housing activist Julia Cochran. So now, let's go inside the Compass. It felt almost as if the pandemic had never happened when several dozen unmasked folks gathered in festive spirit at H.J. Carroll Park for an old-fashioned holiday weekend chillin' and grillin' picnic potluck and barbecue sponsored by the Jefferson County Progressives last Monday afternoon. To the strains of folk tunes provided by Kristen and Otto Smith, old friends and new wandered among booths for organizations like Local 2020 and the Housing Solutions Network, set up under the big Ramada at the heart of the park, while down at the end, others fired up the grill for the main event. I wandered around looking at the displays and talking with some of the participants.
My name is Lori Bernstein, and I'm a volunteer for Whole Washington.
And your name?
Judy Damore, and I'm also a volunteer for Whole Washington.
And your name?
Linda Brewster, also a volunteer.
Okay, and you all are here to represent this ballot initiative, I-1362, which calls for universal health care in Washington. So perhaps you could outline for me what the plan is.
Sure. So I-1362 would provide essential comprehensive health benefits to all Washingtonians, regardless of immigration status. That means it would provide hearing, vision, and dental to all Washington State residents. There would be no co-pays. There would be no deductibles. There would be no co-insurance. All things that really burden most people when they're trying to get health care. And I just wanted to share why I'm in this campaign for healthcare justice. I had a $7,500 deductible on the Affordable Care Act insurance that I was eligible for. I have other friends who work with me at the theater who are working two and three jobs who fall through the cracks. They make too much to have their premiums subsidized so that they can afford health insurance, but not enough to get the subsidy they need to be able to pay for health insurance. And in the meantime, I have a friend who's 42 years old who is 6 weeks out from a double lung transplant surgery. She's recovering right now, and instead of being able to devote all her energy to healing and getting well, she has to monitor a GoFundMe campaign that friends have set up for her and to try to help pay the costs of her, both her surgery and her aftercare. And she's also had to declare medical bankruptcy. So this is really important on a personal level and just for everyone, you know, everyone.
What does
else
a double lung transplant cost?
I don't even know.
I mean, it must be astronomical. I mean, yeah.
She didn't have a choice. She had, the week before she got the call that we've got two lungs ready for you, she had been in the ICU at Jefferson Healthcare for three nights that previous week, and it was like that every week she was going to the ER, so yeah.
So you were telling me a while ago that you're going to need to get some 400,000 signatures,
right,
to get this on the ballot. How long has the campaign been going on, and how far along are we?
Well, we just started, and the reason we're in this predicament is because this actually was a bill before it morphed into an initiative. It was SB 5204. Unfortunately, the chair of the committee, a Democrat, wouldn't grant the bill a hearing, and so she effectively killed it in committee. And so rather than wait till the next legislative session, where the bill would be reintroduced, folks at Whole Washington decided to turn this into an initiative campaign. And so we're now tasked with gathering 400,000 signatures by December 31st of this year.
In order to get it on the ballot, when?
November of 2022.
How does this initiative propose to pay for itself? I mean, it sounds like a very expensive proposition.
So Basically, there are a couple of different funding sources. Employers will pay 8.5% of based on the gross wages of their employees after a $15,000 exemption. And by the way, small employers with 50 or less employees, they will be exempt from this. This will be waived for them.
Most employers currently pay 18% for their employees. So this will be a savings for them.
So it would cost less and offer more.
Exactly. So the employers could pay 8.5%. They could also choose to pay the 2% employee contribution and leave the employees without that burden. Investors will pay an 8.5% capital gains tax. The first $15,000 won't be taxed. And then excluded from this are home sales, farm sales, and retirement accounts.
I think it's important to add that it isn't as difficult to find a way to pay for it as it sounds, because when you take the profit out of healthcare, all those middle people, and all the money that goes from our insurance companies to lobby our politicians, you get rid of a lot of the expense of healthcare. Also, really importantly, the administrative costs. In Canada, the provincial plan, it's called OHIP in Ontario, has 30 to 35% lower costs because of the administrative thing.
That goes for the providers. They save money because they don't have to have this staff that's constantly communicating with the insurance companies to find out whether the patient they want to treat is actually insured for that, or sometimes not even being paid.
If I can just piggyback onto that, a couple of things. You mentioned Canada, and I think we were talking about that earlier.
Yes, that's right. You were mentioning that Canada started off with a province-by-province method before they came up with their national plan.
Right. So same thing here. California is trying for a state-based universal plan. So is New York and so is Washington. But we're also working on H.R. 1976, which Representative Pramila Jayapal introduced into the House back on March 17th. And right now, what we're trying to do is pressure certain representatives that are in the top 20 of those who receive the highest amount in campaign donations from corporate pharmaceutical, healthcare, and insurance industries to really either refuse or greatly reduce the amount of money they take in corporate donations. And so there's a campaign sponsored by National Nurses United, which is the largest nurses union in the country, to try to push these representatives to take this, what they call the patients over profits pledge. And we here are trying to get our representative in Washington 6, Derek Kilmer, to take this pledge. He currently does not support Medicare for All or H.R. 1976. And I had a meeting with his healthcare policy rep in D.C., spoke with her and his district director for the state of Washington, outlined all the reasons why this would be beneficial for not only Washingtonians, but the entire country. And he's still pushing back on this. So if we could at least get him to cut back on the campaign contributions that he receives and perhaps resist the efforts of those lobbyists, that would go a long way toward taking steps toward getting Medicare for All. We also have a website where people can access that online petition. We're trying to get 1,000 online signatures in order to exert some pressure on Representative Kilmer.
And that website is, could you read it to me?
It's long. ACT.Medicare, and then the number 4, all. That's ACT.Medicare4all.org/signup. That's one word. /POP-Kilmer/. We need 1,000 signatures.
Okay, so and that's a petition that's just going to Derek Kilmer. Is that right?
Del Bene in Washington 1, and I forget the name of the rep in Washington 8, are also targets for this campaign as well. Interesting that 3 of our representatives right here in Washington State, a blue state, are among the top 20 recipients in terms of high dollars from these corporations.
And what reasons have these representatives given for opposing Medicare for All?
Representative Kilmer says he has 6 basic unanswered questions, which I answered for him. I wrote to him and his staff. But in terms of reasons, what he wrote to me this year was, I think most people are happy with their employer-based insurance, which took, I'm not sure what to say about that. I can't remember the numbers of people who lost their insurance this year because they either lost their jobs or were furloughed due to the pandemic. But to say most people are happy with their employer-based insurance when we've seen that tying insurance to employment is not a guarantee of coverage is, I'm not sure what to call that. He also talks about he thinks we should just improve upon the Affordable Care Act. But improving upon the Affordable Care Act still leaves private insurers in the driver's seat, and that is one of the main reasons that our healthcare costs are exorbitant. So it doesn't get rid of the problem.
Obviously, this is something that the private insurance companies will fight tooth and fang.
Well said.
And will spend huge amounts of money to defeat.
But there are more of us than there are of them. They may have more money, but there are more of us. But we're not going to get this passed unless everybody does step in and joins us and puts in some effort, or it's just not going to happen. You know, the three of us can work as hard as, can work our fingers to the bone, but it's not going to happen unless everybody does a little bit, does their part.
Do you have any idea how many people like you there are across Washington now?
Nobody. Nobody's like Laurie Bernstein.
But this is a popular initiative.
You want to sign the petition? You want to help us? You want to go to the farmer's market with us?
If people will stop and listen to us and understand it, they will sign it. It's just, you know, some people just don't sign petitions. And so that's the kind of people that aren't. But most people are like, yes. And all the people that I've talked that are in the healthcare business say yes. You know, so they understand.
Yeah. Is it available on the web for people to sign?
No. These have to be in person, or what they call wet signatures. The one for Medicare for All is available online. Yes.
It is. Okay.
And I gave you that address, yeah?
If people are seeking to wet sign this, how can they find you?
We've been at the Saturday market every week, standing out there sweltering in the hot sun, saying, do you support universal health care in Washington State? And asking people to sign. And for the most part, people have been really enthusiastic.
And do you know how many signatures you're up to at this state?
We don't. This is completely volunteer run, and we're having to get volunteers to drive petitions back from the peninsula, from Spokane, from all over the state, and get them to Seattle. So I don't think, you know, it's kind of slow going getting them back, so we don't know what our numbers are at this point.
So the headquarters is in Seattle?
It's someone's home in Seattle.
For the campaign?
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a phone number people can call? Or
Phone number. They can go to lori@pollwashington.com. I'm the county lead for Jefferson County and the district lead for the NNU campaign.
Okay, spell Lori.
L-O-R-I at pollwashington.com.
Right. Doug Milhoen, what brings you out here today?
I am here because I am a victim of hope. It won't leave me alone. Wakes me in the night, and it encouraged me to think outside the box. Because the boxes that are there to get into are really toxic. So I try to find places where I still feel the breath of the creation, because that's where hope is.
And what do you hope specifically might come out of this event on this day?
I might find kindred spirits who say yes to some of the calls I put out into the blogosphere. I might find somebody who says, yes, I would love to have a strong Hiroshima Nagasaki event happen this year in Port Townsend. I might find somebody that says, Doug, you've got some strengths, but you're missing a leg or two. Can I help? How can I help? And that's what each one of us, I suspect, are here for, to listen for how can I help when it's offered, and to offer that when it feels right.
So I know that you were once again the principal organizer of a Father's Day event out at Indian Island, which I was unfortunately unable to attend this year. Can you describe what happened this year?
What happened on Father's Day at the West Coast's largest weapons transfer depot was courteous. A few Quakers and a few others, we gathered, shared food, family members were there for me, and I said, I'm not here to talk a lot, I'm here to listen. I'm encouraging you to listen, and I'm encouraging you to do that indwelling spirit kind of listen. And I thought it worked pretty well. Lord knows I could talk and talk about issues that deeply concern me. But at some point, we broke into two groups, about 10 on each side. 10 held us in the light, Steve. 10 walked across the street to the federal side of the street where somebody said, now that blue line, if you cross that blue line, you could be arrested. And I thanked them and we just kept on walking.
You crossed the blue line.
Yeah. We walked right up to the gate and the person there had two questions for me. Now, in the uniform with a large weapon prominently displayed on his hip, five or six armed men guarding the gate where so many hundreds of thousands of tons of munitions have left to go out into the killing fields. He said, what is your intent? I said, our intent is to have a Quaker vigil here at the gate. We're not going to read speeches. We're going to go into the silence. We're going to listen to our hearts. We're going to speak what needs to be spoken to the best of our abilities. You're invited to be here with us. Oh, do you intend to block the road? If a vehicle comes, will you let it go by? There have been times in the past where I would have said no, but I didn't say that today. I said, we're not here to do that. We're here to have a meditation. Fine, the fellow said, that'll be just fine. So we settled into a semicircle, which included them, a circle. And we had a chance to talk about the 140,000 veterans that have killed themselves since these 9/11 wars started happening. People spoke about all the victims where these bombs and guns were used. And it felt really good, Steve. At some point, I asked 5 more minutes of those that had joined. And we agreed that was the window we had asked for. And I didn't read any of the tough-edged poetry that sometimes comes through me. I did as a Quaker might do, show up empty-handed, waiting, listening to each other, to whatever it is. And the 5 minutes were up at some point. I can't say what others spoke, but I do recall my sister-in-law saying, we've been at vigils where we hold in consciousness those that aren't here now. And I hold all those that have died in consciousness. And we all said presente. And that was a blessing for the vigil. It was good for me to do that. And it was lovely that to have my older brother and his wife and daughter there, willing to cross the lines, willing to risk arrest, willing, if necessary, to go to court, willing to pay a fine or not. But my experience is doing this, Steve, is that the complex, whatever we call it, that the military, industrial, congressional complex, it doesn't want showy trials. They really want to keep it quiet. And I walked away wondering, oh, geez, I should have been arrested. It would have been so much more compelling. But I really liked that 15 minutes of silence there at the gate. It worked for for me and others. And then afterwards, we went back to the park, and I took down the little sculpture that I'd set up with sticks and ribbons.
Which shows, to remind our listeners if they haven't heard this in previous years.
Yeah, what I did is I took a tape measure that allowed me to go out 70 feet from a center point, and I cast a 140-foot diameter circle, and I put up stakes that were 8 feet high, 20 feet apart, that were decorated with ribbon that were fluttered. And that size of cylinder represents the size of a cylinder adequate to hold the blood of 640,000 people, which is a meaningful but small fraction of how many have died since 9/11. Now, I'm not talking just about bullets to the head. I'm talking about we got no clean drinking water, or there's an embargo and we can't get the medication. That's a factor that multiplies things by 10. So, but I also called out for the veterans who come back with post-traumatic stress disorders, and how many of them have been injured by these wars, to say nothing of the suicides. And it's theft. It's theft from meeting the real needs of the human race. And God knows, the biosphere itself. So it feels good to do that on Father's Day, and I'm very grateful to be able to talk with you, dear people. And I'm grateful that you asked me, Steve. And I'm going to do it again next Father's Day out at the West Coast Premier Weapons Transfer Depot. It's a good place to sit and mull things over.
I spotted homeless and housing activist Julia Cochran wandering through the crowd. Having just heard that OLECAP, Coast, and the American Legion had failed to come to terms on a lease renewal for the space in the basement of the Legion Hall that for 16 years has served as Port Townsend's only homeless shelter, I figured that as a member of the City-County Task Force's shelter strategy team, she might know what options were being considered to replace that space. It turned out that she wasn't particularly disturbed by the loss.
What needs to be said is the American Legion was questionable at the best. It's a windowless environment where the secondary exit's a flight of stairs and they have a population on walkers. And the women were in boxes, surrounded by men. This is not a way to reduce the trauma in your life. So what I do know is that the county is looking at the Jefferson Community School, and that there are three floors. They have different levels of access unless the county does something like an elevator. And so given the population at the shelter, if they were to be part of the Jefferson Community School's, that building, there's
which is, of course, no longer the Jefferson Community School.
Right, it's no longer Jefferson Community School, but it still has that sign up. And it also says Order of the Odd Fellows, but so does the movie theater uptown. So who knows? So there's a ground floor that reminds me of the, in the best terms, a strip mall. It has five doors. It looks like there should be little stores there. It's very sweet, actually. And so that's the most accessible. And then there's a main floor, which is a short flight of stairs. So I know that's one piece of the puzzle. I also know that the county is looking at several other pieces of land somewhere around Mill Road. I'm not exactly sure where they are. To do more of a continuum of care sort of thing, something that will deal with the encampment in 3 months.
At the fairgrounds.
At the fairgrounds. Yeah, the fairgrounds encampment. And we'll eventually do more, depending on what that plan is, exact location, a whole bunch of stuff, how big the space is, and that there's other stuff going on. I mean, there's several solutions sort of popping up, but they all take time to develop. And the county has offered the fairgrounds $100,000 for 3 months. $60,000 of that is infrastructure improvements. My personal view of that is that that's an investment in the future for future emergencies, which we are definitely having. It was probably within
is
the
air
rest
conditioning
going to
be part of that?
I don't know. No, not air conditioning, but they are going to upgrade their toilet facilities and I think some roads. And so anyway, $60,000 is going for infrastructure improvements and $40,000 is basically rent to allow the homeless to continue to live in the campground. I think
for 3 months.
3 months.
Three more months. So
September
that's
September 30th.
I see.
And so during that 3 months, theoretically, the county will acquire land and will develop it enough that they can move an encampment there, put in, you know, some version of toilet facilities, some source of water, blah, 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 blah.
Well, as we all know, I mean, Port Townsend is facing a serious housing crisis for everyone. I mean, I just had a friend of mine, a handyman. He works as a handyman. He's got a family of four. And they, a few months ago, were given the word by their landlord that he wants to sell the house. And they need to make other plans. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like...
Yeah, so right now, both the city and the county have limitations on what they call supported encampments. They can't. The problem with this whole thought process is you can't limit the encampments. Right now in Washington State, you can camp on public land if you're not in the way of something, if you're not obstructing in some way, right? You can camp on public land and they can't remove you unless they have a place to remove you to. So they can't limit the amount of encampments. And churches can do car parks and various other things using their properties. And I'm not sure you can actually limit that. That is also a state thingamajiggy. But you limit supported encampments to 40 people or something. You're limiting how much support you are giving the unsheltered. And what is the point to that? Is it really better for that neighborhood to have an unsupported encampment on its fringes than a supported one, where social agencies are involved? People, you know, they have access to various things. And they also have help in creating a self-governance model so that it sort of has a level of governance in the encampment that keeps things from going out of hand. And so that's what I see the challenge right now for people who are advocates for the unsheltered, is to get the city and the county to just remove that. There should be no limit on how many encampments a nonprofit can decide to support. That's silliness.
At the Chillin' and Grillin' Picnic Potluck and Barbecue, sponsored by the Jefferson County Progressives, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon and repeats on Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ Live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.